All right, and welcome to November 2nd on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because history is important. You see, one of humanity's flaws is trying to get somewhere not knowing where we came from. We just wind up going in circles and repeating mistakes of the past. So it's not necessarily about memorizing dates and people's names, although that's important too, but understanding the concept of history. I assembled this podcast in a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. If you're looking to move to the area or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. And now let's begin the show as we customarily do with a Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags if we have one, put our right hands over our hearts, and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. And now on to today's headlines. Well, wish a happy birthday to Daniel Boone. Plus, the election of 1832, Old Hickory wins again. And Dia de los Muertos ends in San Antonio. All right, so now here I go. 1734. Happy birthday, pioneer, frontiersman, explorer, and entrepreneur, Daniel Boone. One of America's first folk heroes was a man. Was a big man. Spoiler alert. The TV show that depicted him, that ran in the 1960s, were exaggerations. First of all, he probably never wore a coonskin cap. He wore a beaver hat. Second of all, the stories were sensationalized. But who cares? It was a cool show. One of the interesting things about this entrepreneur was the fact that he repeatedly got it all and then lost it all. American cultural favorite Daniel Boone was born on this day in 1734 according to the Gregorian calendar. His parents, who were Quakers, escaped England's persecutions, came to the New World, and settled in Berks County, Pennsylvania. As a young boy, Daniel was a natural in the wilderness, and around 1750, the Boone family settled at the Yadkin River Valley area in North Carolina. The Lenape Indians nearby showed young Daniel how to hunt and trap, and by the time he was 13, Daniel was literally putting food on his family's table thanks to the rifle that his pa gave him. In 1755, when Indian tribes were threatening local settlers, 20-year-old Daniel joined the militia and served in the French and Indian Wars under Major General Edward Braddock. Yes, the same Braddock that ignored a young Colonel George Washington's advice on how to fight the Indians, and as a result, perished in the battle at Fort Necessity. Yes, that Braddock. Along the way to Fort Duquesne, Daniel, who was a wagoneer, met John Finley, who had already traveled through Indian villages in the Ohio area, and told Daniel of a land called Kentucky. In 1756, Daniel married Rebecca Ryan, and together they had 10 children. He fought with a militia during the Anglo-Cherokee War, and then resumed his hunting and trapping career. Not sure if it's because he had a bunch of children or not, but he tended to take long, shall we say, business trips. Dressed in his buckskin leggings and his beaver hat, he would grab a hatchet, hunting knife and rifle, and headed deep into the Appalachians, sometimes with his friends, called long hunters, and sometimes by himself, disappearing for weeks or even months at a time, checking out options for the Manifest Destiny, and returning with deerskin and otter pelts. In 1769, he and some of his buddies blazed a trail from North Carolina to present-day Kentucky, where he would be captured by the Shawnees. The first time he was told to leave and was released, and the second time he had to escape. One of the men in his group was killed by natives, and Daniel's deerskin was stolen. So Boone left, but ignored the warnings and came back 2 years later, this time bringing his entire family and about 50 settlers, which probably wasn't the smart idea considering his past dealings with the Shawnees and Cherokees. And besides, the British government hadn't even opened the area to settlement. So they set up fort at the Kentucky River, and six of his men, as well as Boone's oldest son, were captured by the Cherokee and tortured and slaughtered. Many of the settlers headed back east, but Boone stayed behind, naming the area Boonesboro. Boone's daughter and her friend were kidnapped, and Boone led a scouting mission to retrieve them, which he successfully did unharmed. In 1778, he was captured by the Shawnees again, only this time things were a little jollier, as the chief decided to adopt Daniel Boone as his own son, since he was so impressed by his hunting skills. After living with his new family for 4 months, Boone escaped and returned to Boonesboro, only to find that his family took off and went back to North Carolina, thinking that he was dead. He got his family to return to Kentucky with even more settlers and created Boone Station. But the title to the land was stolen from him. Another harsh entrepreneurial failure. He was also a politician, and at one point was elected to the Virginia legislation in 1781. After the end of the American Revolution, he established a port in what is now Marysville. In 1784, John Filson wrote a book about Boone's adventures and discoveries, and Boone became an overnight sensation. He purchased thousands and thousands of acres of land and established a trading post in modern-day West Virginia. But the post didn't make any money, and he lost title to his land again, this time due to debts and bad business mistakes. It happens. The Spanish offered his family a nice place in Upper Louisiana, now Eastern Missouri, and offered him a role of local judge in the town. Good for Daniel, right? Until the French acquired that area from the Spanish, and the United States got it from the French during the Louisiana Purchase, leaving Boone penniless again. On September 26, 1820, Daniel Boone passed away at his son Nathan's house in Defiance, Missouri. His legendary status continued to grow, with more bestsellers written about his adventures, and one of his grandsons would establish Boone's Ferry in Oregon in 1846. Four of his descendants played in Major League Baseball as well, Ray, Bob, Brett, and Aaron. Historian Roger McGrath called him an entrepreneur, a man in the make. He stretched the boundaries of society and law. He accumulated wealth through discovery and adventure, and by violent struggle with the Indians. Happy birthday, Daniel! 1832. Voting begins for the 1832 presidential election. Spoiler alert! Old Hickory wins again, this time beating Clay, Floyd, and Wirt. But this election was much more than Andrew Jackson winning a second term in office as President of the United States. There was a lot going on around these times. The bank wars, the rise of Martin Van Buren, the anti-Masonics, the spoil system, and for the first time ever in American history, national conventions. Alright, first point. The Second Bank of the United States was nearing the end of its 20-year charter in 1832, and Secretary of State Henry Clay wanted to keep it. Jackson wanted to get rid of it. The keeper of the bank, Nicholas Biddle, allegedly used the bank to fund Clay's presidential campaign. In fact, Biddle would work on, quote, making Jackson pay personally for making the bank a party question, unquote. Clay would do everything possible to smear Jackson in the press. The spoil system was in place, which gave jobs and favors to friends and family who gave their support and contributions to the winner of the election, was now in full effect during Jackson's administration. The corrupt bargain helped John Quincy Adams to win the 1824 election thanks to the help of Clay, who was appointed Secretary of State after Adams won the election. The difference between the spoiled system and the corrupt bargain, in that regard, would appear to be 4 years, between 1824 and 1828, when Jackson won the first time. But that's neither here nor there, though it was an interesting point of the 1832 election. Meanwhile, Vice President John Calhoun from the South, who had also served under President John Quincy Adams, was constantly at odds against Jacksonian policies regarding several issues, but mostly the bank. Old Hickory would veto the recharter of it, and his friend and New York Senator Martin Van Buren would help Jackson to dismantle it. Because of this upcoming showdown, for now, Calhoun was out, Van Buren was in as Jackson's vice presidential running mate. Meanwhile, after the disappearance of former Mason William Morgan, conspiracy theories led to foul play since Morgan was an outspoken critic of the Freemasonry, and through his ashes rose the anti-Masonic party. This party was legit, folks, at least for about 8 or 10 years or so during the 1830s, would die by 1840, morphing into the Whigs, and would rise again in the 1870s and 80s. Two American senators were anti-Masonics, William Palmer of Pennsylvania and Joseph Ritner of Rhode Island, and they were also heavy hitters for the 1832 elections. And now, for the first time, not only did America have a third party from which to choose, but all parties were separately meeting to garner support. Much of the campaign smear had to do with Jackson's bank war. Notwithstanding, the Democrats won their second victory in a row with nearly 688,000 popular and a butt-whooping 219 electoral. Henry Clay of Kentucky, National Republican, but not the same Republican Party we have today, wasn't even close. 530,000 popular and only 49 electoral. South Carolina Independent John Floyd, who probably didn't even realize he was running, managed to come in third with 11 electoral, and the anti-Masonic William Wirt won 7 electoral and a little over 100,000 popular, in other words, right on par for a third party in an American presidential election. The Democrats would enjoy these continuous victories until 1840. Today, Dia de los Muertos ends in San Antonio. This Mexican three-day event, which of course started everywhere on Halloween just like it does every year, honors friends and family who have died. Thousands of years ago, the Aztecs used to spend the entire month celebrating this holiday, and then it morphed into a Spanish Catholic tradition, ending it on this day, All Souls Day. Though it's a historic part of Mexico's culture, as we can see, it's celebrated pretty much everywhere in the United States, particularly in San Antonio. Very cool. Candlelit processions, live music, parades, delicious Mexican food, traditional altars, and gritos, or spoken tributes to the dead, makes this the biggest Day of the Dead celebration than in any other city in Texas, and probably the entire United States as a whole for that matter. That said, there are plenty of great celebrations if you don't live in Texas. Why, there's one right here in San Diego, California. Of course, being next to the Mexican border and all. And there's also a huge one at the San Francisco Garfield Park with candlelit processions of over 5,000 participants. Of course, this year, due to all the wildfires, you might want to leave the candles at home, assuming you still even have a home. Viva la Muertos! Yes, I know that didn't make any sense at all in English, but it sure was fun saying it. Viva la Muertos! And so that, my friends, is going to wrap it up for November 2nd on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DiCristoforo. Take a look at the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's episode.
Or what about this other website that I didn't talk about today? For instance,
did I miss anything about James Polk? Or did I cover it pretty well? Anything you care to add to that story? Or for that matter, who's your favorite cheerleader? Who's your least favorite cheerleader? I've already told you mine. So yeah, let me know what you think on the comment board. You can also take a gander at some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on there. Good luck with those. And be sure to check out tomorrow's episode. We'll finally wish Warren Harding a belated happy birthday, since it is today after all. Plus, election news. Stephen Curry, the Chicago Tribune post the wrong election headlines, and so much more. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can check me out on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle is at JDUSHL. Stands for Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. See you tomorrow.